I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, head out of the Del Real here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle. This is a very, very special 355th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. It's special because we have a special guest that is one of my, if not my favorite follows on X, formerly Twitter. I'm talking, of course, with Mr. Rudy Havenstein. Rudy, it's great to have you on. We're going to talk markets. We're going to talk the bizarro world that exists. But before we get to that, because I suspect we're going to be on there for quite a while, how are you doing? And thank you for your time.
I'm doing good. It's good. Every day above ground's a good day. And we had fun last time talking with you. I had fun last time talking with you guys. And too bad there's nothing to talk about lately. You know, there's nothing going on. But other than that, just happy to be here.
It's a serene world. We'll try to figure something out. Mr. Hodge, how are you doing today, sir? How are you and your beautiful family doing?
I'm doing great. It's almost spring here in the Pacific Northwest. The grass is greening up, as I told you last week. Insulated here in my little bubble, I know plenty to talk about in the rest of the world, which we'll get into in due course, including, you know, the things, bombs and sell-offs and international child sex trafficking rings, etc. But all in due course. Well, how are you, Gerardo?
I am well, sir. Allergies aside, I am well. Look, we had, I live in America, right? I live in the beautiful city of just outside of Austin, Texas. And unfortunately, we had another, you know, a mass shooting downtown, about 3 to 4 minutes from where our middle child works this past weekend. And so, you know, three people unfortunately have passed, two 19-year-olds. And a 31-year-old that had just been here for 2 weeks, about to make his MMA debut, and was out just celebrating, you know, doing what young men do. And so 19 people shot overall, just an absolute tragedy. So I feel very fortunate that my biggest problem right now is allergy season, right? And so thankful to be healthy, thankful to be here. I'm very critical of anything corrupt, and that includes obviously politicians, but that includes law enforcement when I see things that I think are abusive, right? And in this case, I want to be the first one to say thank you to the Austin Police Department. There was a response time of 57 seconds to neutralize the shooter, who was armed with an AR-15 and a handgun. And in those 57 seconds, he was able to shoot 19 people and kill several, and several that are still in critical condition. So condolences to the families, but that could have been so much worse, just so much worse. You know, it's 1-2 in the morning on 6th Street on a Saturday night with nothing but college kids and people from out of town visiting, you know, the great city of Austin. So kudos to them for the quick response time, and credit where credit is due. Long-winded way of saying I feel very fortunate and lucky. I want to pivot and start with the markets. And, you know, we can't talk markets without talking what's happening in Iran. Of course, the last time that you and I were on here, Nick, I made reference to the fact that the boss, Bibi, was coming into town, and that it would not surprise me if we all of a sudden, you know, started bombing Iran. And sure enough, it was like a day or two later when that started. We now have been told that what was going to be a week or 2 week long process might be 4 to 8 weeks. And now we're told that internally they're saying they're prepared to go till September, which probably means September of, you know, 2029 or 2030 or 2031 or whenever the heck they mean. But look, the energy markets, clearly, you know, feeling at the pump. Oil is up over 20% in the last several days. The overall indices have retraced down nearly 1,000 points today in the Dow. The dollar index, which I said before was screaming war to me, after breaking down at the 96 level, was closer to the 100 level this week. So I say all that to ask you, Nick, the one thing that I haven't seen move a lot is volatility. And that one is a little perplexing to me. And I know you watch volatility on, if not an hourly basis, definitely a daily basis. I'd love to hear your take on that. And then, Rudy, I want to hear your take on where you think this goes. But, Nick, where do you think the volatility, we were seeing it in the overall indices. We're not really seeing it spill over there.
Yeah, the VIX, as I look at it, is 23.56. I was tweeting earlier, it's actually lower than it was during the government shutdown of last fall, if you can think back that far to the October, November timeframe. And so, look, the market was front running this. The market knows what is going to happen. It's never wrong. It has premonitions. It has inside information. It is the market, right? It's omnipotent and all knowing. And I've been telling you for weeks that there was a rotation. I recall on our sheet that we used for this podcast, I had sector rotation at the top a bunch, and I was showing you, certainly was showing members of Foundational Profits that energy was now leading, that it was now the, the number one sector. That's the XLE, one of the 11 sectors of the S&P that contains, you know, the oil production and development companies, Exxon, Chevron, on down the line to the refiners and the pipeline companies. So they were getting the message. Gas prices have gone up at the pump. I saw Trump said that if they rise, they rise. I don't think that's going to bode too well for any of his constituents, and including myself, who can afford higher gas prices. Just here in the Pacific Northwest in Washington, I saw diesel was up, you know, 75 cents a dollar in very short order, driving past the pumps. Yesterday, gold volatility remains elevated. It is actually higher than the volatility index of the S&P. So if I pull up GVZ, which is the gold volatility index, it's at 35. So that remains higher. And we're seeing some of the things I told you we could potentially see last week. I was telling you that with elevated volatility comes the potential for wider swings. And you shouldn't be surprised if gold swings 300 bucks, and you shouldn't be surprised if silver swings 20 bucks in short order. And lo and behold, that's what we've seen and what we've saw. Gold go to 5,300 on the initial bombing, or even a little higher, and then pull back closer to just below a 5,100 handle as I was watching it today. So the volatility is in the commodity side of things, and not necessarily in the S&P side of things, is one important distinction. And then I think the final thing, because I want to hear from our guest and I don't want to hear myself in my headphones all day, is we're still in a bull market on the S&P. I mean, we're getting these 800 and 1,000 point down days in the Dow, but the Dow is not the S&P. The S&P remains actually bullish. It's being led by materials, industrials, and energy. We still have economic growth. It's not the 4% that we had in Q3 and in Q4 of 2025. We just got the print recently, you know, down around 1.5% growth there to end last year, but still positive economic growth. And I think that supports maybe not a constructive, but certainly not a recessionary scenario over the next 3 to 6 months. What the market's having trouble with is the rate of change, which I've explained on this podcast a lot, especially as it pertains to inflation, which is now starting to tick back up after it was ticking down, which most people couldn't believe all of last year, getting down on the January print to 2.39%. And now you're going to start seeing it tick back up, right? Because of the things, mainly the oil, which you already alluded to. So when those things change, the growth and inflation, especially when they go opposite directions, or when the growth or when the inflation is going higher in rate of change terms than the growth, in very technical terms, the market no likey. So that's what you're seeing right now outside of the Iran stuff.
Rudy, I got to ask you, gold's been good to all of us, still in a bull market, ditto for silver. In your floating underground bunker of the underground city that you live in and reside in, are you approached? Are there conversations about gold as a store of wealth, as a hedge against, you know, all of the madness that's going on? And we'll get to it here in due course. But are those common conversations amongst the people that you interact with? Because Nick and I dabble in this space on every day, all day. So of course we're having the conversations, but how common is it in your part of the world?
I would say it's very uncommon. I still don't think, you know, I mean, you guys, it's like, it's your living to talk about mining and gold and silver. And I've been a fan of gold, for the last 25, 30 years. I mean, mostly just from a philosophical point of view, you know, it's not a, there's no counterparty. Ever since 71, you know, there's no breaks on any of the money printing as we've seen. So, but actually, and the people I know, you know, a lot of my friends are, you know, well, they range the gamut from, you know, dock workers to a lot of small businessmen or doctors and things like that. So, they rarely talk about gold. One guy, one friend of mine, very bright guy, a doctor, said that when his that he had recently inherited some gold coins from a relative, and he was asking me how to sell them. You know, he just wanted to get the cash, and he had, it didn't occur to him at all that it was, you know, to me it's money. It's you know, my summary of gold is it's a handgun I keep in the drawer and hope I never need. You know what I mean? It's kind of like I don't trade. Well, I'll trade like mining stocks, you know, and, sure. and I'll trade maybe rarely something like GLD or FIZ or whatever. But gold is just like, you know, someday my grandkids will hopefully have it or something, you know, where, you know, it's once they, you know, get access to it. But it's no, I don't think it's in the conversation at all. I mean, even the financial types have just recently started talking about it, yeah. you know, but even then, what percentage of people do you think in America own gold other than, you know, maybe in jewelry? And some people are selling their jewelry. You know, I've been seeing articles on that. And, you know, a lot of people are hand to mouth. So if you have a, you know, have a bracelet that's now worth $5,000, you know, I can understand why people would go sell it. Americans have no understanding of gold. You know, what's that? I forget the guy's name who did the videos years ago where he'd like offer people, you know, here's a half ounce gold coin or a candy yeah. bar. And there, I don't know how many took the gold coin, but it was there was so many people that took the candy bar. And even then, gold, you know, would have been $1,000 coin, you know, so it's just crazy. I think Europe, of course, the Chinese and the Russians and the Indians, you know, I like to joke, what do those people know about history compared to Americans? You know, they of course understand gold, and it's saved a lot of them. Look at a rupee chart of gold or something. So, you know, yeah, I mean, now it's come off a bit. I mean, a bit. We're still, I mean, it's still wet nuts. We're still way up over 5,000.
Yeah.
And as you guys know, when there's a sell-off or people panic, they don't sell, they sell what they can. And gold is very liquid. And if you need cash quick, you know, you can sell your gold, especially nowadays, because it's, you can't get physical, you know, it's almost impossible to get, I'm sure. And I haven't tried in years to buy gold, but I'm sure it's very difficult to get physical. I was going to say, you were mentioning just a couple of things. I jotted down while you were talking, Nick, yes, inflation, they got it. Well, I didn't know they got it down to 2-3. I thought, I don't know if we're talking, of course, then again, what measure are you talking? There's
the monthly year over year CPI.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even look at monthly. Next, you know, they're going to do Planck value or something. They're going to do five-minute inflation. I think the core CPI, which is where they exclude food and energy, which, of course, nobody needs, was recently 2.7, something like that, year over year. Now, I could be wrong, but it's pretty darn close. But that's, we are over 5 years above their 2% target. Sure. I'd like to emphasize, this is sure. around April 2021, using their very understated CPI model and using a 2% target that they pulled out of their butt. Okay, I think somebody in New Zealand in the 80s mentioned it or something. So they all decided that they need 2%. You know, I actually have the transcripts from a Fed meeting posted where Greenspan is saying, you know, our target should be zero. And it was Yellen who was the biggest advocate for, oh, no, I think it should be 2%. And I'm sure she would want it higher, too. But back then, that's what she fought for. And I consider people like her, you know, financial war criminals.
Agreed.
But, and, you know, the other thing you mentioned, gas. I mean, I'm in California. So if your gas goes to $4, mine will be 12. You know, it's like, because we live under the, you know, the communist People's Republic of Gavin Newsom, which, you know, I hope he runs for president just to get him out of California, because I can't imagine the other states are stupid enough to you know, elect a limousine liberal, another limousine liberal California, you know, goofball.
Oh, God. I'll never forget him walking down, you know, the homeless stretch of L.A. with like $1,000 suit on and a latte in his hand and his $500 haircut. And security all around them. He's like the most tone deaf, and this is saying a lot. One of the most tone deaf left leaning politicians I have ever seen.
I don't think they're gonna go with him, but if they do, I am just gonna be, you know, relentless against Gavin. Gavin's the worst. I had to live under him during COVID, and he was the worst. You know, he was just of course, I'm in a bubble. Where I live is way more normal than other parts of California, but or way more not insane. I guess I'll say that.
That's
not normal. But yeah, Newsom's bad news. Hey, I tweeted a couple of weeks ago. Hey, if America wants their gas prices to double, just vote for Gavin Newsom. I guarantee you, he's still on the, you know, the wackiest of the wacky environmental stuff. he's full on in the open border stuff. He's full in. God, I don't know. It's hard to believe, you know, the pendulum has swung so far in California.
I'm here in Washington, and we're right behind you, Rudy. And yeah. We've got the second highest gas prices, and the new governor promised no new taxes. And guess what? we're getting an income tax this month, which the state constitution says we're not allowed to have.
Well, not only do we have the biggest gas taxes for state here, I think among the biggest. I'm not sure if it's the biggest, but they want to start hooking up to your car and taxing you by the mile that you drive.
Oh God.
So yeah. Yeah. And California's a big state. You know, it's not like you're in Vermont or something. This is a big state. And yeah, so that's another idiotic idea that they have. And of course they're going to wealth tax people with over $1 billion. And even if that passes, eventually it'll be okay. If you make more than $100,000, we're going to take 5% of your unrealized capital gains or whatever. This is a country, you know, fruits and nuts, you know. I think they were joking about California in the 60s that way, but the weather's nice. People say, why do you live there? It's horrible. You know what? The weather's nice. It is nice. I've lived in a few other places, and this is nice.
Yeah. Listen, it's $1 billion a day for every day that we're bombing, Iran back to the Stone Age. And so however you feel about the Ayatollah and the atrocities committed under his regime, and however you feel about that regime, you know, my heart goes out to all of the people there that have been abused by the regime and now get to get bombed back to the Stone Age by the U.S. at Israel's behest. And so I have to ask you, Rudy, how do you feel about what's going on over there and the way that it's being carried out? I mean, it's hard for me to believe, and I'm an optimist by nature, by the way, it's hard for me to believe that with the technology we have and the precision that our partners in Israel operate with when they want to, that the very first day or two, one of the first targets is an all-girls school that kills 160 girls between the ages of 7 and 13 during school hours. And again, I'm the optimist typically in most of the conversations that I have, but it sickens me the approach that's being taken. And again, I have friends in the military. I am a taxpaying citizen. I have a large tax bill on my desk as we speak. We're going to get to the Epstein stuff and everything else, because the last time we spoke, we speculated about a lot of things, and you've been great at documenting. You and Whitney Webb have been phenomenal for well over a decade documenting the stuff that was out there, but it was harder to find. We didn't have files yet, so we're going to get into that here in just a bit. But thoughts on what's going on in the Middle East, and any idea on how long you think this actually goes for? Because I don't see this being the short-term thing that we're being promised, and the fact that they're promising it leads me to believe that it's total bullshit.
It's been a very disheartening week. I mean, I'm, you know, no joke. It's just, I feel like I'm watching the Iran-Iraq war sped up, and you know, those poor girls killed in that school. What was there? I almost have people tell me, oh, it's their fault for being close to an Iranian military target. You know, what is wrong with us? I have a lot of people with, you know, crosses in their bios, you know, saying we need to kill them all, you know, and what are we doing? And for what? My whole life, Vietnam, you know, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, it's always worse. And what have we gained from all our soldiers' lives, all the trillions and trillions? You know, Trump said, I posted it today. Trump was saying, I think it was 5 or 6 years ago, you know, we've spent $8 trillion on the Middle East and we can't fix our roads. How stupid is that? That was Trump. You know, I also posted another video where he talks it's a video put together by DropSite of 10 years of Donald Trump saying, you know, how stupid war is, and he's never going to get us into any new wars. You know, I mean, yeah. it's the uniparty. As I like to say, there's only two parties in the United States. There's the neocon forever war party, and then there's the wackos. Right. You know, and I'm a charter member of the wackos. I'm not a pacifist. I used to be a big Cold War, you know, anti-commie, anti-Soviet. I'm still anti-commie, but as I got older and I started paying attention, I think that the neocons have harmed America and the world far more than the Russians or the Chinese have done. And it just angers me as someone who loves America, you know. My post today on Twitter, the casino tweet was them singing "God Bless America" from the end of The Deer Hunter. And I'll just say, young people, if you've never seen The Deer Hunter, it's a really hard movie to watch. But every American should watch that movie one time. It's not a movie you like watch again and again. You watch it one time, and you see that war is, when it comes to the people that are fighting it, it's about their brother next to them and just trying to get back home and saving their fellow soldier. They're not, you know, as that soldier got his arm broken yesterday, that vet, you know, he says, American soldiers don't want to die to fight for Israel. And that's what this fight is about. Rubio's George Bush Light. Yeah. There was a guy named Victor Sparandeo, who's an investment guy, old timer. And he said years ago, with Marco Rubio, you get George W. Bush Light. And I think the light part is probably wrong. It's probably on steroids. He basically said, well, you know, Israel kind of dragged us into the war. So, and Trump kind of said the same thing too. By the way, you guys may have missed it because you're preparing for this, but Trump just said in the last couple hours that, you know, wars can be fought forever.
Forever wars. We can do
79-year-old man starting a new forever war. Yep. You know,
I was going to ask you about that.
Shit, and somebody said yesterday.
No, we curse around here, Rudy. Don't apologize.
I rarely do. I really don't like to do it. I mean, I will do it. I got no problem.
The times call for it. I mean, the stuff that's going on.
I've done podcasts with Dave Collum. You know, I mean, I've heard it all. Anyway, it's just forever wars. You know, we don't learn our lesson. You know, Iran is not Iraq. Iran is 90 to 100 million people, the mountainous terrain. They fought an 8-year war with Saddam Hussein, which we funded both, you know, we armed both sides, and they didn't lose, you know, and their culture, they're not going to collapse because you killed some guy named Khomeini. You know what I mean? And I know that the mullahs are SOBs and repressive, and they kill people, and there's people raped and stuff. But you know what? There's been a lot of rape accusations against some of our allies in recent months, by the way. But, you know, I made a point that it seems like we've bombed everybody in the Mideast that wasn't involved in 9/11.
Correct.
The Iranians were out in force in support of America after 9/11. I remember it. They were filling stadiums because they know they're Shias. It's the Sunnis that have been killing the majority of the Muslims around the world and Americans. Mm-hmm. The Shias and the Sunni have, like, you know, what, a 1,400-year-old battle going. Why are 18-year-old American soldiers involved in this? I said this about Syria. I said it about Libya. I don't know if there's open air slave markets in Iraq, you know, but there sure is in Libya. Thanks, Obama.
Thank you, Barack. Yep.
And by the way, you know, I want people to know. People think I'm just bashing Trump. No, you know what? When Obama did stupid things, like did things like this, or Obama didn't do anything this bad. But, or Biden, or George W. Bush, or Clinton, I don't care, okay? I don't care about party. Correct. You throw off the D versus R, forget about it. It's a dead end, you know? I'm America first, and I mean for real. I mean not America first unless Israel has a higher priority. And people say, oh, you're anti-Semite if you criticize Israel. I don't care if it's Botswana that we're tying our legs to, or if it's Belgium. I care about America. And, you know, I saw some stupid video from Glenn Beck today where he's talking about he talked to a George Washington AI or something.
What are we doing?
This is a guy that used to make fun of Trump by rubbing his face in a bowl of Cheetos, okay? Glenn Beck. This guy is such a nut. And George Washington, which I post many times, his farewell address, he rails against foreign entanglements. He rails against getting in wars based on what other countries want you to do. He warns against attachments. He also warns against political parties. But to see some scumbag like Glenn Beck use George Washington
to
justify
the name of George Washington,
for this war. Oh, and I know they're not calling it war. Was it a kerfuffle? You know, it's embarrassing. Sorry, I'm fired up, but I've seen this
life. It's either a kerfuffle, Rudy. You should be fired up, or it's Armageddon in the Book of Revelations, according to some of our military
commanders. Don't get
commanders.
Me started on that. You know what? You know, Hank said. You know, someone said a guy didn't tell you to fight for a country that was formed 1948 or something. Okay, people. I don't know, man. I mean, I don't want to go into religion, but. There's some crazy people out there of all Muslims, and there's crazy Christians too, or they call themselves Christians. And there's crazy Jewish people too. And there's crazy Hindus, you know, there's crazy in every group, and there's
crazy
good in every group.
In every group. That's a fact.
And I'm not anti-Muslim, because there's a bit,
not at all.
If the Muslims were all bad, then we'd be dead. You know, most people just want to live like you and I. They want to have peace. They want to have a nice neighbors. They want to make a living. They want their kids to be safe. And man, what the number of kids we killed. And you know what? Even if you say, I've had people tell me with assurances that, oh no, the Iranians blew that school up. You know, and I don't know what to do with these people, but because even the Israelis aren't accusing the Iranians of it.
They're investigating. We're investigating.
I posted a video where a former head, a former spokesman for the Israeli government basically says, hey, don't try and blame us. You know, it wasn't us. And you know, if he had even fake evidence that Iran did it, he would have said it was Iran, but he didn't. And what he's doing is, I said, hey, it looks like this guy's pointing his finger at the U.S. And it sounds like
there's two people in the car and they find a gun and one of them says, it's not mine.
Right.
I mean, that's exactly what's being said.
Yeah, I know. Anyway,
it ties right into Epstein. Let's get right to it.
Let me just say one more thing about this.
Please.
I really don't think people are taking it seriously yet. Most people. I mean, the VIX is at 24, you know, oil went up 20%, like you said in the past week, which is understandable. I'm surprised maybe it couldn't be higher.
Yeah.
But I mean, look at the S&P. It had some dribs and drabs here. You know, nowadays 1% drop is like 1987 crash for people, but
sure.
I don't think this reminds me, I've been walking around all week, shaking my head, telling people, you know, I hope I'm wrong. I always hope I'm wrong because I really do. I constantly hope I'm wrong. But this feels eerily like the run-up to COVID when I'm reading all sorts of stuff in December, 2019, and then January and February of 2020. I'm even making jokes. I think my first COVID coronavirus joke was probably early 2020, you know, or maybe late 2019. And then one day it's like the market just went down, you know, 5% or something. And late February of 2020. And I made a joke like, oh, people just discovered the coronavirus subreddit, you know, on Reddit. Because none of this, you know,
it's not funny.
The stuff that was going on had been talked about for 3 months, at least, if not more, in certain circles. And, you know, I'm looking at videos. I don't just watch... the American media is so, our Overton window is almost nil. It's so tiny. You know, on the left, we've got, you know, MSNBC, and on the right, we've got Fox. You know, I've been trying to watch, you know, Al Jazeera or other sources. Now, are they propaganda? Some of them, sure. But you know what? We used to have RT and Al Jazeera on my cable. They're both gone. I do have an Israeli news station. And then I've got Newsmax, where they just hired Alex Acosta, who got Epstein that sweet deal. But I used to watch him like during one of the other wars in the last 25 years. And I'd flip, you know, I'd watch Fox, I'd watch MSNBC, and then I'd flip to Al Jazeera, I'd flip to RT. And the thing I found about RT and Al Jazeera was they were no more biased than anybody in CNN or Fox. I mean, in some ways, they were more straight up news. But the stories they covered and didn't cover, and the stories our guys didn't cover, that's where you notice the difference. Yeah. You know, Al Jazeera will cover, hey, they bombed this school and killed a bunch of people. You know, CNN may have 20 seconds on it or something. You know, I don't know. And anyway, I think everybody needs to question everything. First casualty of war is truth. And we've been lied to constantly in my life. We were lied to about Vietnam. We've been lied to about Afghanistan. We lied to Iraq, Libya.
COVID.
And one last thing before we'll talk about Epstein is somebody made the comment, you know, it took us $3 trillion to replace the Taliban with the Taliban. Mm. You know what I mean? That's our foreign policy. It's like, let's just kick ourselves in the balls for my entire life. Our foreign policy sucks, and it's the neocons and I'm tired of them, and America needs to change. And Trump is a total fraud on that. So anyway, now so everybody can hate me.
No, we have similar political leanings around here. Very not in tune with either side, and right. You know, lean more libertarian, social liberal, fiscal conservative, all those sort of things. So before we make the turn, I want to ask you, what is your why? Because I hear you talk about the Uniparty, and you call them all the neocons, and it sounds like I haven't been around as long as you, but I firmly see that we're living in a post-truth world. I was told about weapons of mass destruction when I was 18 years old. And I remember Condoleezza Rice talking about how we don't want this smoking gun to turn into a mushroom cloud, all that propaganda, right? And I've seen the cartoon, and I've often shared it and put it in publications, The March of Tyranny, right? Where the one leg is the Democrats, yes. and the other leg is the Republicans. But what is your why? So why do we go into these forever wars? Why do we try to have a regime change? Is this, and maybe I'll just go through my evolution thinking about it. You know, is this military industrial complex stuff like Eisenhower warnings where, you know, we're being run or led by this cabal of quote unquote insiders that are, you know, in and around the DC Beltway that work for Booz Allen Hamilton and Raytheon and Honeywell, et cetera. And we have the revolving door with politicians and lobbyists, et cetera. Or is this more of an international thing? You know, we're talking about Israel and we talked about religion. Like, what is your why? Like, why do the insiders, or why do those who have the power continue this, whatever you want to call it, international war, forever war, ongoing campaigns, regime change, etc.?
Well, think about it. Eisenhower's farewell address, which I actually posted the video of it, and if you look at my pinned tweet, I quote from it. That was in 1961, at a very high point of the Cold War, and when we literally thought that, you know, either one of our countries or both would be vaporized at any moment, right? And for him, a soldier, not a you know, armchair chicken hawk warmonger like Bill Kristol or David Frum or any of these guys, Max Boot, or any of the Marco Rubio types, he'd fought in a war. He knew about war, you know. And for him to warn, in that speech, in his farewell address, he doesn't warn about the Soviet Union much. He doesn't. He barely mentions them. He doesn't say we need to be worried that the Soviet Union is going to, you know, communism is going to take over the world and blah, blah. He warns about the military industrial complex, as you pointed out. And he also warns about a technocracy, like basically an army of unaccountable bureaucrats, which, you know, my big thing all these years has been going against the Federal Reserve. That's what I think they are. And my other big thing is going against the warmongers. Yeah. So imagine how much worse it is if he's warning about the military industrial complex in 1961. Imagine how much worse it is now. There's a great quote from Hemingway that I love. It says, the first panacea for a mismanaged nation is inflation of the currency. The mm-hmm. second is war. Both bring a temporary prosperity. Both bring a permanent ruin. Both are the refuge of political and economic opportunists. I think that describes our country in my lifetime to a T. You know, as for why are we doing this? We're doing this because there is a group of people that have an agenda that does not align with the United States people. Before Iraq, before 9/11, there was a list of countries that they wanted to go through. And General Wesley Clark ran for president. And I posted all of this out there. Everybody's looking.
Yeah, they said it publicly. They weren't even hiding it.
They listed there were seven countries. Of course, you know, Syria was on it and Lebanon was on it, I believe. And I mean, I'll repost it after. But the last country was Iran. And this is in, 2000, So they had planned. In fact, they had planned the Iraq war before 9/11. 9/11 was an excuse for the neocons to really take over this country. And by neocons, I mean, you know, some of them are old Trotskyites or, Irving Kristol is considered the father. Bill Kristol's dad is considered the father, I believe, of neoconservatism. It's basically warmonger. There's nothing conservative about being a bloodthirsty warmonger. And I'm not talking about being a pacifist. If a country punches us in the face, Let's punch them back proportionally, you know, and what are we doing in Iran? Is our country perfect? Again, going back to Trump's own words, you know, are any of the countries we've invaded and since 1960, are they better off? I mean, I don't know, maybe Grenada and Panama, the two smallest ones, you know, we haven't had any trouble from them since the great U.S. squashed them, you know. And in Panama, we had to go in and rescue our ally. Well, take out our ally, our former ally, you know, because he'd gone off the reservation. You know, it's, oh, he's a drug dealer. Oh, my God. We knew he was a drug dealer. He was our drug dealer. And then he ticked off George H.W. Bush, who, by the way, ran the CIA for a few years. And so we had to go grab him. Anyway, that's just it's all part of the same thing. This is not in the interests of America, in my opinion. And none of it has been. America's not. Look at all the debt. How many trillions and trillions and trillions of debt have we run up in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, you know, Vietnam? I mean, that's when they had to go off gold, you know. It's sickening to me, and I'm very pro-American, and I say, you know what, it used to be pro-American, it used to be patriotic not to want to bomb everybody, you know. I said an isolationist is someone that doesn't want to bomb everybody into freedom and democracy, you know. This is a huge mistake that I think Trump has made. So unnecessary. We've learned nothing from our history. And it just angers me, as you could probably tell. You know, I love to joke around. I find it very hard to joke around when we're just dropping bombs on people that never did anything to us. Now the mullahs, oh yeah, did they do something to us? But you know what? Everyone's going, oh, 79. They forget 1953 when we went in there and overthrew their democratically elected president who was popular because we wanted the oil and us and the British. Okay, so think about it. If Iranians had come over here in the United States in 1953 and overthrew Dwight Eisenhower, I would think there would be some residual anger towards Iran from Americans. Americans never put themselves in other people's shoes. You know what I mean? Trump's, I'm going to pick the next Iranian leader, you know?
He's the anointed one, Rudy. Of course he's going to pick him. He's the anointed one, according to the military commanders talking to our soldiers that are being sent to die. 2026 is so bizarre that I find myself agreeing with Candace Owen and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Tucker Carlson. And I'm sitting here looking at my bingo card and I'm going, that was not on my 2026 bingo card.
No, I know.
But they're making more sense than most of the people on either the left or the right.
Yeah, and Massey, love that guy. I mean,
love Massey. Somebody donated to Massey last week.
Somebody tells me, oh, he's a Freemason or something. You know what? As long as he keeps doing what he's doing, God bless him. You know, I don't have a litmus test for people. If I support you on one issue, Gerardo, and we disagree totally on another issue, I'm not going to keep attacking you on that other issue. I'm going to support you on the issue we agree on, and I feel that way in general. You know.
Agreed. Keep us out of new wars. Let's get this $39 trillion debt that's supposed to go to $64 trillion within the next decade. Let's try to figure out how to address that. Quit bombing innocent countries that aren't bothering us in our everyday life, and quit fighting wars for other people. And look, our Congress just voted against having a taxpayer-funded sexual offender slush fund. And the vote wasn't even close. So for those that aren't aware,
they vote not to release who the details of it, right?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. Correct. So congressmen and women, right?
Yeah.
Apparently get in trouble a lot for sexually abusing their staff and each other. So much so that there is a taxpayer fund that Nick, myself, and Rudy help fund via our tax dollars to secretly pay out when complaints come up that are verified or validated to keep them quiet. Think about how nasty this is, folks.
Right.
So, you know, a couple of lawmakers decided, including Massey, this is BS. Like, we don't want to keep using our tax dollars to allow people to sexually abuse and harass staffers and each other. We want any reported staffer or lawmaker that's been accused and has made a payout to quiet a crime that's been committed or harassment. We want the list and we want to know, and we want to do away with this fund.
Why is it a civil matter? Why isn't it a criminal matter?
That's my next question. You beat me to it, Rudy. But the vote, you would think it might be close.
No.
It was like 376 to keep it secret and keep paying out to like 57.
Based on the vote, it was both sides.
It was men and women. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Again, that's the optimist.
I made a joke that based on that vote, that we now know that 15% of Congress are not sexual predators. So, but someone said, well, you know what? If they knew that it was going to fail anyway, then they might feel okay to vote against it, because that's how they do. You notice how we always lose these votes a lot of times. There was a Senate vote about the Constitution, which they reject. I said they rejected the Constitution, the War Powers Act thing that they were trying to get, and that like lost by 3 or 4 votes. It's always because once they know it's going to not pass, or then it's like okay, your district, you're in trouble. Why don't you vote for it? You know, and they try and make each other look good. It's all dog and pony show.
Speaking of dog and pony shows, we had 67, and you know, journalism is under attack in America, right? Real journalism. I'm not talking about the far left and the far right or TikTokers or YouTubers. I'm talking real journalism is under attack in America. And some journalist that tracks this stuff noted that while the bombs were going off in Iran, 67,000 files were deleted from the Epstein files.
Yeah.
Many which included allegations against President Trump. Are they true or are they not true? I don't know. I haven't seen them. You know why I haven't seen them? Because they won't release them and they won't redact them. They now are going to release those this weekend.
Uh-huh.
The fact that someone had to catch them deleting 67,000 files with allegations against the sitting president of the United States of America while dragging in Hillary Clinton, who I'm no fan of, by the way. And making a spectacle of that. And by the way, I thought she handled herself pretty damn well, calling for an investigation of the CIA and the NSA and all the letter agencies. She said, if you really want to know the
destruction.
Truth, yep. Exactly. Let's go play that game. We're getting old anyway. I thought she did that brilliantly, but that is where we're at in America. I mean, I look at the Constitution and I look at like the institutions that are supposed to provide the checks and balances. And it seems like every day, this administration is hell-bent on making sure we push as far to the other side of accountability as they possibly can on multiple fronts. And if it would be impressive and awe-inspiring if it wasn't so sickening to me, the velocity at which they're doing it and the effectiveness with which they're executing it, because it has been effective thus far to the point, and we can get to Epstein in a second, where it's hard to tell anymore what's real and what's not. Nick and I were talking about this a bit ago. We were excited, of course, to have you on for many reasons, including, you know, what's going on in Iran and the debt and gold. But of course, also Epstein, now that we have some files, a small portion of them. But there's so much even in the stuff that's been released that you look at it and you go, is this real? And if Nick and I, who follow this stuff, almost I follow it every day, like, if we have to wonder how real this is or how valid it is, I can imagine how the average American that works a 9-to-5, that has kids, that is you know, just trying to manage how to pay their daycare and the tuition and everything that goes along with just raising a family in 2026 in America, how little time they actually have to dedicate to this. And I think that's why we don't have, you know, this revolution, because if you would have told me again in 10 years ago, you would have told me there were going to be files released in 2025 and 2026 that showed what looks like kids being sacrificed, raped, kids being used as incubators, their babies taken away, satanic rituals, secret societies, plans to form secret societies, names of the people that are doing it. If you would have told me that all that would be made public in like authenticated files, and then you would have told me that there wouldn't be like a lot of like pushback or revolution around that, I just said, there's no fucking way.
Yeah.
Here we are. So I say all that to say, Rudy, what do we know now is real from what you've read that you speculated or thought might have been real before the release of some of these files? And I know you made a comment, I think like a month ago on Twitter, where you said, even I am blown away by the stuff that's in these things. And that's saying a lot for you, Rudy.
Oh, yeah. I thought in 2019, right, in the week after he was killed, I said something to the effect of, and I've, again, all this I've posted.
Yeah.
an honest, thorough investigation of the of what I call the Wexner-Maxwell-Epstein operation mm-hmm. would take down a huge chunk of the American political class, donor class, celebrities, academics, et cetera. I said this in August of 2019. Now it's being proven from the 2% of the files that we've seen. And think about this. With all the sick, obviously investigative worthy stuff we've you've seen and I've seen in these files, most of them are heavily redacted. They're constantly being deleted. This wasn't the first batch they delete. Right. You know, they throw them out there and they go, oops, we shouldn't have done that. They'll have multiple versions that of the same paper with different redactions. It's classic. Someone said it's, and we only have 2%. So imagine what's in the redacted, and then imagine what they haven't even released yet. Mm. And they said, I think they said they're done. I don't know.
I think those 67,000 files, they accidentally deleted are coming back this weekend.
Well, we'll see. I mean, we'll see. God knows. Cause they're still redacting 98% of the, sure. of the terabytes. I believe,
of the 2%. You know? Yeah.
I mean, I said 7 years ago that I thought this was the biggest scandal the biggest conspiracy since 1963. And I think everything we've learned since shows I was right. This guy was connected with everybody. He represents the Rothschilds, who are the richest family on earth, probably trillions. And have been around a few hundred years.
And that came from his mouth, right? When we talk about what's real, that came from
his mouth. He was writing to Peter Thiel, the same guy that was talking about the secret society. Let's set up a secret society. I don't think they're talking about getting in a treehouse, you know? And then what's with all the grape soda and beef jerky and all this other stuff? These guys were clearly involved in some sort of bizarre activity. Including some of the worst stuff.
Correct.
Now, but it's like the government says, okay, fine, you bunch of goofballs, Thomas Massey. Here's a gazillion files. We'll just post them randomly and redacted on the internet. And you guys go to town, go through them and look at them all. You know, hang on. They've had this. They raided Epstein in, 2006 in Florida? And the only reason they did because the local police weren't corrupt.
Correct.
And I'll say this, you know, the feds are fully complicit with the Wexner Maxwell Epstein operation. There
and
is
so are
absolutely
both administrations,
no
both sides.
Now, is every FBI agent? No, a lot of them do good work. A lot of them are arresting bad guys. I'm talking about the group, and I'm sure there's a group in the CIA too that's was involved in this and covering it up. And it's covered up under, as Massey and others have pointed out recently, it's been covered up since George W. Bush. Because that was in 2006, he was president. And the only person that could tell a U.S. attorney general to stand down would be Bush. I mean, this had to come from Bush initially. And then I'm sure they said to Obama and they said to Biden and they clearly Trump has no interest in this coming to light. Right. And as much as he said it, just like he said, he's not going to start any new wars. The guy's a liar. OK. And he said, he makes it sound it's a hoax. It's a hoax. What are you talking about? It's a hoax. And then, oh, by the way, your name's in, 6,000 emails or whatever it was, yeah. and photographs and all. Oh, well, Trump's like, well, maybe I bumped into the guy one time at a real estate auction somewhere. You know, see, it's the same way with Maxwell. He was super close to Maxwell. He was super close to her father. Epstein was very close to Maxwell, the Maxwell family, not just Ghislaine. It's far worse. It's basically as bad as I thought, only worse. But what amazes me is that I'm like, isn't there anyone at the DOJ with a conscience? Are there any whistleblowers? We got the assistant head of, I don't know if he's from DOJ or if he's FBI or whatever. And you say, I posted this. He's like, we are not going to release any files that depict death or torture or physical injury. And I'm like, okay,
meaning
fine.
They have them.
who have you prosecuted for these crimes? You know, it's like you were just describing this congressional slush fund for Congress people who molest their interns or pages. Remember, there was a page scandal years ago in Congress, or maybe outside people they're molesting. Why is there it's like J.P. Morgan and Leon Black paying off Virgin Islands. You know, it's like why is sex trafficking a civil matter? Where's the DOJ? Why is the Virgin Islands trying to prosecute this before the prosecutor got fired a day after a Biden visit? Why isn't the DOJ prosecuting? Why aren't they investigating? I mean, they've had all these years. You know, Trump too came. Trump was president for almost 600 days after Epstein got rearrested in 2019. And then, of course, within a month, they killed him. And then, he got away. That nothing would surprise me. And then when we come to this time a year ago, Trump's like, okay, or after a lot of pressure, okay, now we're going to go through the files and look at them. Well, wait a minute. What were you doing when you were president back in 2019? How come your DOJ didn't go through there? And, you know, my first post on Epstein was 2014. Bill Barr was Trump's attorney general. He was also attorney general under, I believe, George H.W. Bush, you know, years ago. And he was involved in covering up all sorts of things like the Iran-Contra scandal and the George W. Bush torture programs. He's been around a long time, Bill Barr. Trump could not have picked an attorney general less likely to pursue a real Jeff Epstein investigation. Bill Barr's dad hired college dropout Jeffrey Epstein when he was 19 years old to work at a very prestigious New York private school. So, Donald Barr was in the OSS and Bill Barr was in the CIA in the 70s, okay, yeah. When the CIA was also running honey traps. Posted on all of this, and this is like 7-8 years ago. I'm posting this, I'm getting publicly available information. I don't have any secret sources. I'm not a reporter. I have no resources. I have no interns, although I joke about interns. I got no help. I do this because it keeps me from overtrading, seriously. And I have an interest in so many things, and this is one of them. I don't like bullies, and I view these Epstein guys, all these billionaires, and the way they treat women and children. I view them as bullies, and on a sick scale, you know. Way worse than a schoolyard bully. But I would like to see a little bit of justice, and there's been no justice, no justice from Bush, no justice from Biden or Obama or Trump, and certainly no justice from Clinton.
Nobody.
Remember Trump? Remember when his chant was lock him up, you know, he's going to put Hillary. The very first QAnon post, by the way, which I think was a total psyop, said Hillary Clinton's going to be arrested on this date at this time, you know, that. So I tell people, oh, what about, you know, for years it was like if I mention Epstein and Trump, they'd say, what about Clinton? I say, yeah. Or if I mention Clinton, they'd say, what about Trump? I'm like, I don't care what letters after your name if you're doing this stuff. And a lot of people can't understand that. It's bizarre. You know, this partisan tribalism that people have in this country, you have to get out of that. Stop it. There's good and bad in both parties. Okay. Mostly bad in the ones that we elect, unfortunately. Probably because to get elected, you have to be fully compromised.
I want a little bit more on Gerardo's sort of question there, Rudy, is sort of like, how are you separating the truth from the fiction? So, you know, when these files started coming out, I had a buddy call me up and he says, you know, I know you track this stuff fairly closely. I was at my kid's ball game the other day and all the parents are talking about, have you seen they're eating the babies and they're killing them and they're drinking the blood and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, I don't have enough time to read all the files. I don't think anyone does.
No, neither do I.
Even the journalists have said they've been using the AI to synthesize and interpret and some of that stuff. And so, you know, you can search for somebody's name or you can search for a term like cannibal or baby.
Right.
And you can get a couple of things. But even some of the stuff I read in the files says that, and, you know, who's to know what's true, right, in the post-truth world like we've been talking about. But, you know, how do you know what's true? Some of the stuff in the file says like this came from a discredited source or something like that. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, here's the question. Why is it your job or my job or Gerardo's job to do this?
Correct.
Why? That's my point. Where's the feds been on this? All the feds have done on this case over the years is stifle the investigation and apparently collect a heck of a lot of interest of evidence that they never. I mean, it's amazing. It's 2026, and apparently this is the first time they questioned Les Wexner, who is, my God, he's almost like patient zero of this entire scandal. And they traveled to his house. I mean, Congress, what?
Epstein
why wasn't he brought? Why wasn't he brought?
Attorney over his whole empire. How does anyone believe that happens without being seriously compromised?
In 2006, he should have been dragged into an interrogation room and questioned. Okay, the feds squashed any investigation in 2006, and they've done it ever since. There is no real investigation. Like I said, they toss a million files out there and say, and kind of snicker and go, okay, internet, go for it. Now, how do you know what's true? You're right. The ones where they're like eating babies or whatever. Okay, there's two options there. One is it's true. One is they actually are. You know, as sick as that sounds, people don't want to believe stuff. You know, history is full of very sick stuff that actually does happen. The other option is whenever there's intelligence agencies involved, and intelligence agencies are, and multiple intelligence agencies are very involved in this case since the beginning. It's very common practice when there's a dump of some evidence, quote unquote, that they'll throw in, fake things in order to. So if you run with a true thing and then you also say, and look at this, the fake thing, what they'll do is they'll say, oh, well, you believe in the fake thing, therefore everything you say is fake. That's right. A very common intelligence tactic that goes back, you know, forever. So I frankly think that Epstein was worked for Mossad and the CIA. He had to work for the CIA too. In fact, the CIA, you know, who sneaks in and either absconds with or murders someone in a federal lockup
with non-working cameras? And they just admitted they scrubbed the entire footage.
They scrubbed the footage. And then, oh, wait, 15 years later or 20 years later, here's the footage. Oh, wait, no, that's not the footage. You know, oh, the footage been altered. Oh, there's seconds missing from the footage. They are so full of it, okay? I don't believe a word they say. You know, William Casey, the CIA director back in, the 80s under Reagan, he has a quote, which I've sourced on that I posted. He goes, well, no, our job is done when Americans won't know the difference between what's true and what's not true. He was the head of the CIA. By the way, there's a book out called Hollywood Madam or Washington Madam or something like that, where the guy that ran a gay brothel talks about how William Casey was one of his customers. So imagine the blackmail they probably had on that guy. I mean, they had blackmail on Hoover, which is why he never went after the mob for so many years, the FBI. Now, like I said, there's a lot of good people at the CIA and at the FBI. I believe that they're patriotic Americans doing good work, but I think there's a certain group in each agency, probably at the higher levels. And probably this is how they got to the higher levels, are working for not the American people. I have no judicial or police investigative experience. I could have come up with a list of 10 people I would have called into the headquarters. Give me subpoena power. Let me put them under oath. And this is back in 2006, okay? It's kind of, you know, that ship has kind of sailed. And God knows how much evidence has been destroyed, or just hidden away. You know, even after they seized Epstein's mansion in Florida, some of the evidence, there was an article about some of the evidence went missing after they seized it. It's like, oops, you know, and I joked, oh, well, the evidence belonged to intelligence. I mean,
look at the stuff in New Mexico.
He has this massive ranch in New Mexico, which is, by the way, in the middle of the governor of New Mexico's ranch. It's like it's like Andorra or something. It's like in a little hole in someone else's property. And that's where he allegedly had the Clintons visit on many occasions. And I'm sure he had all sorts of other people there. Beautiful, huge ranch. I've seen pictures of the inside. Never searched. He had a house in Michigan, I believe. He had houses all over the world. He had a house in Paris, mansion, and by house I mean gigantic mansion. They searched the Florida one, the New York, but you know, I think they gave plenty of time. There's stories that Epstein was given heads up. You know, he clearly, like I said, if you believe that it was an intelligence operation, which Alex Acosta said he belonged to intelligence. That's why they gave him the sweetheart deal. Where, by the way, he 6 days a week, he gets to leave prison for 12 hours a day.
Galeen is sitting right now in a minimum security prison with a puppy.
I know. Epstein was, you know, they say, he was convicted of one charge, that guy Dershowitz. Don't get me started on him. One child, like it was one girl. No, it was like 30 to 40 girls.
Dershowitz wanted to lower the age of consent to 13?
He's a sick guy. These are 13, 14, 15-year-olds, high school girls, 16. And it was a bunch of them. And a normal guy, well, no normal guy would do this, but a regular Joe would have gotten decades, you know, for this. Epstein gets a deal that they couldn't believe. The police in the local PD in Florida were furious. The police chief was one of the best advocates for these victims. And I posted some of the interviews the other day of these girls with their faces, you know, redacted. It angered him, just like I'm sure it angers you guys and me.
Yeah.
You know, a normal person is repulsed by this, but you get people like Bondi or Trump or Cash or Bongino, and they're like, you know, get on with it. You know, I mean, it's like they're not, it doesn't seem to outrage. Well, it did outrage them, you know, until Trump became president and decided, it's a hoax. It's a hoax. It's like, oh God. I don't know why everyone doesn't see it. But you make a good point. We have the time and the inclination to look into these horrific things. And I know way too much about this case, but most people don't. They're working 9 to 5. That's true of foreign policy. That's true of anything. That's true of the Fed. One of the reasons I started coming online in 2013 was because I talked to my friends who were like small business owners and smart guys, investors, and they had no clue of the Fed, what the Fed was. They didn't know what the Fed was doing. They knew nothing about its role in what I call the kleptocracy, wealth inequality. I mean, it's been good for them, largely. It's been good for me, too. But I'm not a psychopath. And, you know, it's not been good for our country or 90% of Americans. Yeah.
Can you talk about, and I know we're over an hour, but I had a couple of things I wanted to ask you while we had you. Well, don't be sorry. We'll have you as long as you want to stay. But I want to be, I want to be conscientious of your time. Can you speak to the global nature of it, right? So we had known about, you know, Ehud Barak, and we had gotten some sniffs of, you know, Prince Andrew. And so we sort of knew those names. But in the past couple of weeks, I think it's really been eye-opening, at least for me, the global web of who was involved. So that's the first part. And then the second part is, it seems like internationally, there's a little bit more, I don't know what the right word is, appetite for accountability. So, you know, I've seen, queens of Norway, foreign ambassadors from Scandinavian nations to Middle Eastern nations that have had to step down. I mean, this was truly a sort of global thing. Can you speak about that for a little bit? And then we will have come nearly full circle talking about Israel and why we do some of the things we do.
I think I know where you're going with that. Yeah, I have been pleasantly surprised to see a handful of foreign figures seem to face some sort of small accountability so far. I mean, Prince Andrew, when I saw he was arrested, I was like, wow. And then, of course, he was, I think, released the same day. So we'll see if it's a dog and pony show or not. I'm not surprised because, you know, I knew from publicly available independent journalists years ago that, and also from my own research, you know, I'm pretty good at Google search and searching books, old books and things like that. It was pretty clear that this guy was plugged into just about everybody. Now a lot of the, you know, he's a big eugenicist, he latched onto a lot of academics. I mean, I was railing for years about his very close relationship with Larry Summers.
I mean, you see a neuroscientist at Columbia having to resign. I haven't even got to science physicist, of it yet, but anyway, go ahead.
Economist, physicist. The whole gamut. So the fact that it was global, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, heck, he worked for the Rothschilds. Okay. You know, that's how he presented himself. And a lot of his emails were with Rothschilds. So it's not like he's making this up to impress people. This is true stuff. You know,
Bill Clinton's very good friend, by the way, according to his own testimony, which his lawyer quickly told him to shut up about.
Oh, Bill was so funny in that. He kept like staring at the pictures till his lawyer yanked it away. Someone said it was like a guy looking at his first Playboy. Bill's a scumbag. I mean, we all knew that, though. But I think what a lot of people don't want to admit is that Trump's a scumbag, too.
Absolutely.
And you know what I mean? And I've said that forever. But, you know, like I said today, look, you may like his tax policies or his border policy, but that he's still a sick guy. So it's global. Now, getting on to another point is, why is the U.S. so reticent? Well, first of all, because I think the CIA was very clearly involved, had to be. Because if it's obvious to someone like me in 2014, it was obvious to the CIA, okay? And clearly, I think, I mean, it's almost indisputable. I don't think it's disputable that he worked for the Mossad. Now, is there a document somewhere signed by, Netanyahu saying that Yes, Jeffrey Epstein was our employee. No, you never get they don't write stuff like that down. Now, and he's just kind of a freelancer. I've read that he probably provided intelligence on Prince Andrew to the Saudis and to the Russians even. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, a lot of his girls were East European. If there's a lot of Russian or East European connections, and certainly there's a Saudi connection. I mean, he was close with Mohammed bin Salman. So I think the difference between the U.S. and, say, Europe is that I think that because the CIA was involved in the Mossad, I think for me, the most likely explanation for why Trump has done what he's done in the past year is that he's compromised and people in his administration are compromised. The other possible alternative is somebody, they take him aside and go, look. Well, I mean, Trump's in the thick of it. Let's say Biden. Why didn't he release it? You hear that a lot. Well, it's mutual assured destruction. And that's assuming that Biden has the evidence. Biden's not intelligent. I mean, Biden is below the guys that have this stuff. But I think, first of all, it would blow up more – the Epstein thing would probably blow up more Democrats than Republicans. That's one thing. But maybe they said to Biden, or maybe this is really what's going on. If you want to assume Trump's not compromised, what would explain his total flip-flop and all the BS he said over the years? And why is he getting into wars when he said he'd never get, he was opposing all this stuff. He was railing against it. Maybe he's either compromised or they say, look, they haven't released anything around 9/11. They haven't released those files between 99 and 2000. Between 2000 and 2001, they haven't released any emails from there. Maybe they say, well, there were some people involved in 9/11 that are our allies. Maybe. And I'm not naming any countries. I'm just saying maybe that's something. Maybe Epstein was, maybe our CIA was fully complicit in with the Mossad in using Epstein's numerous security cameras to compromise politicians. The CIA has a long history of doing that, and I'm sure the Mossad does too, and so do the Saudis and the Russians. And maybe they say, look, if the truth were to come out about what we've done over the past, 30 years or whatever, Americans would be outraged. We'd have to have hearings on the CIA, which might, there might be calls for it to be disbanded. I'm just spitballing here about it, because it's very clear to me it's the strangest thing in the world why Trump and three previous presidents have not gone after this. In fact, actively squashed it.
So a few conclusions. Bring it home for me before we start to wrap up here. People say that, this is our French Revolution moment. And, in my own mind, I gave up on right and left politicians, right after 2008, right after Obama turned out not to be the Messiah. And then I look around and I see how, we can pinpoint people, whether it's El Mencho in Mexico or some guy walking down the street in Tehran. And I wonder how any individual or group of Americans could ever rise up against the state at this point. And so what is the hope that, there is a turning point or there is a pulling back of the curtain, or there is any accountability in the United States, given the surveillance apparatus and the state strength that we have here?
Well, like you point out, it's not musket versus musket anymore. I get people telling me, oh, let's, I think part of the problem, I think if everyone in America knew what was going on, I think we would have a violent revolution, frankly. But I think, like we talked about, there's what percentage of the population has even remote, small awareness of the facts of this case? Very few. Very few as a percentage. As I've said on Twitter before, there's a lot of people who their sole knowledge of this case is, well, Trump said something and I believed it. Okay, Trump says it's a hoax, so it's a hoax. There's a lot of people like that, but they're still a small minority too. I think I one time said, look, and this was talking about the Federal Reserve. I said, look. Give me like 5 minutes on primetime TV, like on whatever the most popular show is, America's Idol or whatever it is now. And I'll try and go through bullet points real quick of the Federal Reserve and show charts and everything. I think I could get people fired up, but they never gave me that 5 minutes, and I'm not a billionaire. But
You want 5 minutes now? I know we're not the most we're not American Idol.
I've been going against
the Fed
forever. Their private bank cartel is the biggest wealth equality generator in history. You know, I mean, it's anyway. Don't get me started on that. We'll be here another 2 hours. But yeah, I mean, I think that you know what? That's why I got here years ago. Like I said with my friends, I didn't know anything about the Fed. You know, now I've been doing this for years. I'm just trying to educate people. This is my little thing. Some people tell me, you need to do this. You need to do that. You need to do that. You need to stop doing that. I'm like, you know what? I just do what I do. It's totally stream of consciousness. I don't have an agenda. I don't have anything written down. I don't prepare anything clearly. I just do what I do. Now you do what you do. You know, maybe there's a bunch of ex-Navy SEALs that like are sick of this stuff too. And I don't know, maybe they could be a little more forceful than me, but you know what? They're going to get, come on. I mean, like I said, you know, they got, it's amazing. I thought you were going to say when they say they can identify, you know, listen to your phone while you're walking down the street and watch you moving. Well, you think with all this technology and evidence and everything that they would have prosecuted these guys years ago, but they have no interest in it. And that's what really bothers me. I just want more people to know about it. So hopefully we'll get 1,000 people to listen to this podcast and maybe 500 of them will. Well, the 500 will think that I'm just a complete nutbag. And then maybe some of the other 500 will say, oh, you know what? Gosh, I should look, you know, he makes a good point, you know, which I do on occasion, rare occasion.
One last question, Rudy. I got to ask one. The Pentagon formally notified a tech company that they wanted to use to keep bombing Iran in the Middle East and carry out all their stuff, Anthropic. The Anthropic said, no, we don't believe that it's the moral decision for our company, and we will not allow you to use our technology if you're going to use it to maim and kill. And the White House responded by deeming it a supply chain risk, which it had never done to a modern company in the history of the world. Immediately, the Pentagon pivoted, and of course, Sam Altman came over and said, okay, you can use our technology to go ahead to murder and maim. Just, you know, make sure that we're not liable is, I think, the deal that was likely struck behind the scenes. Yeah. You mentioned how hopefully, you know, there can be a group within the CIA, within the Justice Department, within the FBI, the better amongst them, that can come together behind the scenes and say, this is the red line. Like, we're not doing this, folks. And just blow these institutions up. And I don't mean literally before I get arrested. I mean, expose the corruption where it needs to be exposed, because I'm all for accountability, right? Like, I come from a town in Mexico where I've seen what it looks like to not have a police force because they were all murdered or ran away from the cartels. Like, I know what lawlessness, like real lawlessness looks like. Americans don't want lawlessness. We actually want law and order, but we want real law and order. And the stuff that we have going on right now is just absolutely disgusting. And do you think that maybe, you know, kudos to Anthropic for not selling out their technology. Somebody else stepped up and filled that void within like 45 minutes. But do you think we get more of that? Do you think we get more corporations that start speaking out against some of the stuff that's going on? Because again, I don't think people are aware that Pentagon or the Department of War, as Peter Hegseth calls it, you know, relies on these major tech companies that we use every day for our tweets and our posts and our stock quotes, that those same algorithms are used in a much more advanced way to oppress people around the world.
Yeah, from your lips to God's ears, but I'm not encouraged. I mean, Whitney Webb, who's the greatest investigator going on right now, said, called Palantir the new Epstein. She's like, the Palantir will blackmail you. They have everything you've ever said or done online, you know? I'm not encouraged. As someone once said, my kingdom is not of this earth. You know what I mean? So you can, you know, I try to be hopeful. And of course, in my personal life, everything's wonderful. I'm very fortunate. And so I'm not some angry guy in a basement. I'm actually a very cheerful guy who likes to joke around, but I'm also the kind of guy that won't sit back and go, oh, I don't care that this is going on. It doesn't affect me. I'm doing great in the stock market. What do I care that, you know, there's record food bank lines. You know, I'm not that guy. There are those guys. I run into them on Twitter, on FinTwit.
Oh yeah.
I'm killing it in the market, man. I don't care about some guy. He's probably just a lazy bum. You know, I hear that all the time. And, you know, some people are lazy bums, but some people just, you know, they get hit with cancer or they lose their job. You know, a kid gets sick. You know, where's the compassion in Americans? I mean, there's plenty of it. There's so many good people. You just don't see them on social media posting very often. You know, you get the cranks and the people like some people say people like you, you know, yeah, no, I just try and be positive. I try and punch up. I try and never punch down. People notice me for 13 years here. I'm not picking on, oh, look at this guy, this homeless guy. Look at this bum that should be working and he's begging. I'm not doing that kind of crap.
No.
I'm going against the Federal Reserve, which nobody, when I got here 13 years ago, nobody was going against the Federal Reserve.
And now you've been an inspiration to me.
Now
Rudy.
Maybe one out of 100 are going after the Federal Reserve, but it's encouraging. It was one out of 1,000 13 years ago. So.
Yeah, we're with you on that one, believe you me. I've had some epic rants on here inspired by you largely initially, especially in, you know, a decade or so ago when I started following this stuff a little bit more.
We were on a similar timeline. Yeah, I founded something in 2013 called the Outsider Club. It's a, because it's a big club and you ain't in it. And so,
oh, that's one of the favorite things people text me. Yes.
Yep. I've been doing it for just as long there, railing against the Fed, red, you know, creature from Jekyll Island and all that stuff, and firmly believe that they're responsible for some of that wealth inequality and the homelessness and
absolutely
things that you see.
Most
so, at any rate, Rudy, I'll thank you for your time. I'll let Gerardo wrap us up. Unless there's anything else you'd like to talk about or say
or plug your
own sites. I know rudy.substack.com and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's easy. Rudy.substack.com and then Rudy Havenstein or Havenstein, I'm told. one word, Rudy Havenstein on Twitter. I don't call it X.
There you go. Rudy, thank you so much for your time. Always an honor and privilege. Would love to get Whitney Webb on here one day if there's anything you can facilitate there.
She's very busy.
She's incredible. Incredible. I encourage everyone to follow Rudy. I encourage everybody to follow Whitney. Thank you again, sir, for fighting the good fight. Let's do it again. I suspect they're going to keep giving us stuff to talk about. So we'll find a time where we can circle back and see where this all goes here. It's been an interesting
start. All right. Godspeed, guys.
See ya.
All right. Thank you, Rudy. All right, folks. And now we will get to the premium portion of the podcast. That is all I have. Look, it's been almost an hour and a half. Thank you all for hanging in there. We appreciate the time. We will be back next week. As always, I am Gerardo Del Real, along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 355th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. Big, big thank you to our special guest, Mr. Rudy Havenstein. That was fantastic. Please be safe out there, folks. Take care of each other. Be kinder to each other. It's not very hard to be kind to each other, folks. Take care.
And set your clocks forward. See ya.